Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
American elections. Why are we so divided? Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores with Professor Kenneth Mott, Professor of Political Science at Gettysburg College, who is the author of many other articles and books, but especially The Supreme Court and the Living Constitution. And I'm pleased to remember that he was also instrumental in one of the Supreme Court decisions in which some of his work was quoted. So he's had direct experience with our subject today. American elections, why are we so divided, Ken?
Good question, Jerry. Let's do a little history by way of getting at this. If we go back, say, to the 1930s, I don't want to go all the way back because we don't have time, but in the 1930s and the 40s and 50s, we had basically not just a two-party system, but really, when you think about it, a four-party system. That is to say, among Republicans, we had a conservative wing, mostly located in the Midwest and in New England, and headed by people like Robert Taft, who was known for many years from Ohio, known for many years as Mr. Republican, very conservative. But we also had what came to be known as the Eastern liberal or moderate establishment wing of the Republican Party, headed by people like Tom Dewey, Nelson Rockefeller, and others. And so they were two different wings, if you will, of the same party. And then in the Democratic Party, an even starker situation, where we had Southern Democrats who were not only conservative, but segregationist. And they were the so-called Solid South. And if you weren't a Democrat in one of those states, you didn't get to play the game, basically. If you wanted public office, you had to be a Democrat. But then we also had a Northern liberal wing, which came to be headed by FDR, beginning in the 1930s. And out of FDR's experience, of course, came what we call the New Deal, a lot of sweeping reforms at the national level, things like the coming of Social Security, unemployment compensation, minimum wage, and the list goes on. Then we get into the 1940s, and we begin to see little cracks in those party alignments. For example, in 1948, in the Truman Dewey election campaign, we saw the creation of a temporary third party, the Dixiecrats, headed by Strom Thurmond of South Carolina, and it was a frankly segregationist party. It split off from the Democratic Party. It didn't have enough to do in Truman, but it certainly didn't help his cause any. So that's sort of an opening signal, if you will, that all is not well in the Democratic Party. Then we move on through the 50s, and, you know, Ike comes along, and he's the father of us all, or in some cases the grandfather of us all, and the national hero, and so forth. And because of his reputation and the fact that he had been out of politics effectively for 40 years, he had been abroad as a military man, he had been president of Columbia University, which is sort of a non-political position, and all of a sudden he's wooed in 1951 by both political parties. He chooses the Republican Party, and he is, by reputation, he's a moderate, and he's able to sort of paper over divisions. And he narrowly defeated Robert Taft in the nomination campaign of 1952. In fact, he came into that convention with fewer delegate votes than Taft had, but was still able to pull it out. So party issues are basically put to rest during the 50s. 1960 looked like sort of a lot of hemming and hawing and signifying nothing. As I think George Wallace once commented, there wasn't a dime's worth of difference. Maybe it was Ross Perot later on who said there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between the two parties. And with Nixon and Kennedy, that appeared to be the case. But then, again, fissures arise. We get Barry Goldwater in 1964, who runs around saying, let's purify the Republican Party. He says, we, the Republicans, have become the Me Too Party. The Democrats come up with ideas, and the Republicans say, okay, Me Too. And so he wants to purify it by making it more conservative. Mm-hmm. Well, he gets the you-know-what beat out of him by Lyndon Johnson. But along the way, he carries not only his home state of Arizona, but he carries five states in the deep South. Mm-hmm. And that's a real signal that times are changing. Now, if I have time, I want to talk for just a moment about a fellow named Kevin Phillips. Kevin Phillips was a very young man, a devoted Goldwaterite, who was despondent over Goldwater's shellacking in 1964. But rather than just going home with his tail between his legs, this young man, 25 years old, Kevin Phillips, decided to do something about it. And so he did a study, a personal study, of voting patterns in the states. He looked at presidential elections, gubernatorial, senatorial, congressional elections, and he divided the country into about six regions geographically: New England, Middle Atlantic states, Outer South, Deep South, Midwest, and so on. And he looked at each one of these, and he said in a large number of these, the situation is pretty much hopeless. That is, this region has been a long time Democratic one. Mm-hmm. It's going to stay Democratic or Republican. But then he looked with care at the deep and outer South, and he said these 11 states of the Confederacy are really up for grabs. Okay. And so noting, he tried to fashion a strategy for his beloved Republican Party that might win back the presidency. And he said, what we need to do is focus on two things. And this was at the time of the Civil Rights Act of 64, the Voting Rights Act of 65. A lot of Republicans were opposed to the Voting Rights Act because they thought, well, you know, what this is going to do is to enable a lot of blacks to go to the polls. And we know that blacks vote Democratic about 90% of the time. Why on earth would we support that, right? They're the enemy. Kevin Phillips turns this on its head, and he says, you know, there are really two things that bother people in the South, whites in the South, white conservatives. Yep. One is the so-called social engineering by Washington. That is all the regulations that are coming out, the sort of big brotherism, if you will, by Washington. The other thing, though, is the segregation issue and the voting rights issue. Mm-hmm. And here, Kevin Phillips says, you know what? What we ought to do, we, the Republicans, what we ought to do, instead of trying to block black voting, what we ought to do is welcome blacks into the fold. Because here's what's going to happen. They will increasingly, if they get the vote, they will increasingly take over the party apparatus in the Democratic Party in the Deep South and the Outer South. They will become dominant voices in the Democratic Party. So then the question is, where do the white Republican majorities go, or the white Democratic majorities go? And he says, they have nowhere to go except into the Republican Party. And they are the majority in every state in the South, whites. Mm-hmm. So he says, let it happen. Let it happen. Mm-hmm. And so he creates what comes to be known as a Southern strategy.
Yeah.
And he takes this, he maps it all out in a couple of hundred pages. He takes this to a man named John Mitchell. And John Mitchell is at that time, we're talking about 1965, 66, he takes this battle plan, if you will, to John Mitchell's office, and John shares the office with a man named Richard Nixon.
Yes.
They are law partners
yes.
in New York City. John falls in love with this. He says, my gosh, this young kid mm-hmm. has it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he shares it with Nixon, and Nixon agrees. And so out of that battle plan, which later is made into a book called The Emerging Republican Majority,
mm-hmm.
out of that comes the so-called Southern Strategy. And Dick Nixon follows this. And he succeeds
and
in 68, and then he succeeds in spades, as you know, in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, before we go on with that,
yeah.
Ken, I want to remember a statement by Lyndon Johnson after the Voting Rights Act, after he signed it, is purported yeah. to have said somewhere, there goes the South.
Yes, yes. Well, I think, and he also was cautioned about that when he signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Yeah.
But he knew that was going to happen.
He knew that was going to happen. It didn't happen in the next election.
And, you know, I view that as simply, you know, a factor in his being principled. I mean, he was putting the country before the party.
And a deep Southerner himself.
What about
other issues besides, well, we've been talking about what we used to say was regionalism, in a sense, and of course, in segregationism. Is society maybe more complicated today, or is it because we're complicated in the sense that we are divided in the way we approach things? That is, some people are much different than other people in the United States. How am I trying to say that? That the dividing line runs along other kinds of lines besides black and white.
Well, absolutely. We are a much more diverse society than we were 40 years ago or 100 years ago. No question about it. We are more diverse religiously. We are diverse in terms of the refugee population, the growth of Hispanics, which we all know about, very important for American politics. You know, and the list goes on. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are a very different country.
So that if you look at the map now, it's famous because the two coasts tend to be, what do they say, blue and red states now tend to be Democratic, and the middle of the country in the South tend to be Republican.
Yeah.
Is that partly
now,
because
for,
of ethnic background?
And for years, as you know, the Democrats have tried to reach out, and I think pretty successfully, to minority groups of every stripe. And the Republicans, not so much. In fact, you'll recall that when Romney lost in 2012, they had an internal report, that is an RNC report, which said, bottom line, we have got to do more mm-hmm. to lure these different mm-hmm. groups, these diverse groups.
Yeah.
And so that became sort of the marching orders as far as they were concerned. And yet, what we find with Donald Trump and company is almost the reverse.
Yes. We're going to push the other one to the extreme and see how it works.
It's possible that that will cost them the election.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll wait and see.
But we've also become more diverse, I think, as a result of our communications, our technology, our dependence on the internet, on the cell phone, all the rest of it. I mean, in a sense, we are technologically better connected than ever before, and instantly so.
Mm-hmm.
But in another sense, those have enabled us to avoid coming together physically. Robert Putnam years ago in the 90s wrote a wonderful book called Bowling Alone, and he was right on. You know, we no longer join bowling leagues.
Yes,
we bowl, but we don't join leagues.
Yes,
but we don't bowl in leagues. That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
We are much more reluctant to join social clubs and so forth. We don't interact physically.
Yeah. I don't care always for the word polarization, but we tend to, when you say purify, we also tend to polarize. I mean,
yes,
as if the other side were somehow not quite right with the world, or immoral, or I don't want to use heavy language, but not proper. I mean, our side is the only right side.
Yes.
And is that partly to do with the fact that someone lives in Minnesota or Nebraska in the Middle West and doesn't live
It tends to break down geographically. There's no question. I mean, you look at the electoral map, and there are distinct geographical features. New England, that tends to be quite liberal. The Middle Atlantic states, not quite so much, but still moderate. And you go into the South and things change dramatically in the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an interesting statistic that I like to share, and it goes back to the election of 1976, which was perilously close between Jimmy Carter from the state of Georgia and Gerry Ford, who was the sitting president. Right. And the interesting thing to me was that Jimmy Carter barely won that election. And he carried the Deep South and the Outer South. He was from Georgia. Mm-hmm. But here's the interesting statistic. There was only one state in the 11 states of the Confederacy, one state where he carried a majority of the white vote, and that was his home state of Georgia. Okay. So in real life, he owed that election to the black vote in those states.
And that was the last time that happened, I think, didn't
it? It's very, very telling.
There was not
very
much
telling. And, you know, the Democratic Party did swing south. Clinton from Arkansas.
That's true.
For example, Al Gore, Tennessee, and
right.
so on. And Clinton in the Democratic Party, in the DLC, what was it called, the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Committee, which was formed specifically for the purpose of moving the Democratic Party away from being too far left and bringing it back into the so-called mainstream.
What do you see is going to happen now, as not just in the coming election? It's obvious we're broadcasting before the November 2016 election. But in the long term, what are your views on the prospects?
I think we've got some dire problems, again, along ideological lines. I mean, look, for example, at what Ted Cruz was doing. You know, let's be pure conservatives. And that was his whole approach. And most of what he said in terms of policy orientation was agreed to by his fellow contenders. And on the Democratic side, look at Bernie Sanders. You know, you get the burn by, in effect, purifying the Democratic Party. You know, let's have free tuition and let's do this and do that. You know, the $15 minimum wage and so on. You know, the list goes on.
Do you think, I don't want you to bring out a crystal ball, this is going to continue for a while?
I think it will.
And so are there examples of this in Europe? Or the conservative-liberal divide goes on?
Absolutely.
It does all, Italy, for example, goes on all the time.
It's all over. It's in,
so
it's
we were
in,
slow in coming to this.
Yeah,
we
had, yeah, we had but a it's kind in of Europe, a, it's in South yeah, America, yeah, yeah. Gosh, you name it.
Yeah. Do you see any problem with a two-party system? Do you see some fracturing there? That could not always together be healthy, we've often said, at least we think it would be unhealthy.
Yeah, I won't say that the two-party system is an endangered species, but I wouldn't go that far. But I think we may be in for major upheavals, and it has happened in the past.
Even now, there's talk about that.
It used to be, again, going back to my historical framework, it used to be that there was sort of a mainstream, middle of the road in America politically. And if either party strayed too far from that, the other party just swept in and gobbled it up. Look at Goldwater, 1964.
Yeah. Yeah.
He left the mainstream and he paid the price, and his party paid the price. Right. Look at McGovern, 1972, on the other side, anti-war and all that, and the Democrats paid the price. And but now, I really question whether there is a clearly identifiable mainstream
middle America.
Middle America. I really question that.
We've been talking to Professor Kenneth Mott, political science at Gettysburg College and author of Supreme Court and the Living Constitution, about American elections and why we are so divided. The future looks like we'll have a continuation of the division that we experience today, and it's going to be an adventure to watch this happen. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.